Chapter 33, Amanda. 3 hours icing her knee gave her time to think, time to plan it all out. She sat in front of the TV, front door locked, chair under the handle, phone charging beside her. There were various news bulletins mentioning the home invasion by the axe-wielding maniac, and press conferences on other violent crimes. And then, in the afternoon, they flashed up his picture. It didn't give an occupation, just his age and his name. Frank Quinn. So that was his real name. But there was nothing about him online, she had checked. The channel used a photo of Quinn that Amanda had not seen before in any of Naomi's fake online articles. He had brown hair, strong, masculine features, a broad jaw, angular cheekbones, gray-blue eyes. Amanda needed more than that. She would have to do it the hard way. That meant going out late, and in the full knowledge she might never come back. There was no other way to get the information she needed to trace Naomi. This man, Quinn, was her only link. She needed to get inside his house and learn everything she could about him. Last chance to find Naomi. And it had to be tonight, before the cops kicked down her door. She put her pants back on, her knee feeling looser and cooler. The ice had brought down the swelling from the morning's exertions. It still hurt like a son of a bitch, but nothing compared to the hurt Naomi would feel if Amanda ever got hold of her. She ate little, dozed lightly, and waited for dark. She put on Doc Marten boots, black, of course, a dark hoodie and a black leather jacket. Her hair was hidden under a beanie hat. In addition, she packed a small bag containing a flashlight, a flathead screwdriver with a long shaft, a pocket knife, and a fresh pair of disposable latex gloves. Riding the subway to Greenwich Village, she thought about the man who had tailed her last night. In the blinding light of Naomi's betrayal, she hadn't had time to think about him. Maybe he'd be waiting in her car, still parked a few blocks from Quinn's house. Maybe he'd spoken to the police. Maybe he'd told them that someone was in the area, acting suspiciously on the night of the murder, and this was their car. The more she thought about it, the more Amanda was convinced that the cops could be looking for her already. She had to find Naomi as fast as possible. Her thoughts turned to tonight's job. She had been at the back of the property before. She knew what to expect, and she'd planned this. It wasn't going to be easy, but it had to be done. Her first 24 hours were up. She left the subway station, walked to the street where she'd parked the night before. Her car was visible in the distance, no other vehicles around it. She looked for the dark-colored Escalade and the big man who tailed her, but the street was quiet, the sidewalks clear as far as she could tell. Still, there were pools of darkness in between the street lamps, and she tensed every time she had to step out of the light, her fingers locked around the pocket knife in her coat, anticipating a pair of big hands grabbing her from behind and dragging her deeper into the shadow, never to emerge again. Still, she walked on because she had no choice. On past the brownstone that belonged to Quinn, who now lay in a nearby hospital, still in a critical condition. No cops outside the property. The front door was covered in strips of blue and white NYPD crime scene tape, and there was a notice pinned to the door, doubtless the notice prohibiting entry. The house looked to be in darkness. No lights on in any of the rooms facing the street, no sign of the Escalade. She kept walking, performing a loop of the block. No cop cars anywhere, no cops on the street. There were some cars parked along both sides of the sidewalk like last night, but none of them were NYPD patrol cars. None were occupied, and none were Escalades. She thought that neighbors might be on high alert because of the attack last night, so she had to be even more careful than before. The pain in her knee was still there, but tolerable. If anything, those little jolts of dull pain that came with every step helped keep her alert. Amanda turned the corner, walked to the alleyway that led to the back wall and yard of the brownstone, the same wall she had vaulted the previous night. Except now, she couldn't get down the alley. It was sealed off with more police tape, crisscrossed along the entrance in such a way that there was no way to get past without ripping at least 2 or 3 strands. She exhaled, turned round, checking the street. There were 2 people, 200 yards further up, walking away with their backs turned to Amanda, She had come too far to turn back now. This was too important. No choice but to go on. She put on the gloves, took the pocket knife, and cut the bottom strands of tape. Once they were loose, she crawled forward on her elbows, trying to save her injured knee. She stood on the other side of the police tape. There was no way to tape it back up. She hadn't brought anything with her. She just had to hope nobody noticed, or that if they did, they'd think the tape had just come loose and no more. It was a risk, a sign that all was not secure. Her flashlight sent out a narrow beam, on and off, just to make sure the dark alley was clear, that there was no one waiting in a dark recess to grab her as she walked past. It was clear. She made her way along, feeling one side of the wall with her fingers as she went. Then, she reached the back wall she'd climbed over the night before. She gently pushed at the back gate. It had not been fitted with a new lock. It opened maybe 6 inches, then hit something on the other side. It told her a lot. The fact that there had been an attack in the property 24 hours earlier and the lock on the back gate had not been repaired meant that there was no one else living in the house. If there had been, they would have bolted it shut for security. Probably the cops had just placed something in front of the gate to stop it opening. That and sealing off the alley was all they could do. She pushed harder. The gate bowed at the top, which meant the obstruction was on the ground, low down at the bottom of the gate. She leaned up against the wood, then used her full weight, keeping the pressure coming from her good leg. There was a grating sound, metal against the concrete path. Not loud, but audible nonetheless. It was heavy going, but she soon had enough of a gap to slip through. A garden bench on the path, that was it. She kept low and moved toward the house. There was no light coming from the rear windows. She was surprised to find the house looked largely the same as when she'd left the night before. The tool shed door was still open, hanging on its hinges and swaying slightly in the gentle breeze. There was a dark stain about the size of a small circular kitchen table on the grass. The rear window was still broken. A few shards remained in the yard beneath it. Amanda had thought the NYPD would at least have got someone to come out and replace the window or board it up. Maybe that wasn't their problem. She found herself looking back at the tool shed when she should have been concentrating on the house and possible points of entry. There was something about the tool shed that stirred a lingering doubt in the back of her mind. She didn't know quite what it was. She thought maybe she had meant to do something in the tool shed, but she had forgotten. Forgotten. Amanda ran to the tool shed, peered inside. The burner phone Naomi had given her to lure Quinn into the shed, it was gone. Amanda knew straight away she had forgotten to retrieve the phone before she'd left. Now the police had it. She thought back to yesterday. As far as she could remember, she had not touched that phone without gloves. Naomi had given her the phone while still in their wrapping. It was a mistake to leave one behind. She still had the second burner phone in her apartment, in a bag with the clothes she'd worn last night. Soon as she got home, she had to dump that bag. Amanda swore under her breath, shook her head. She needed to get her mind back on business. Otherwise, she might make another mistake. She tested the back door of the house and found it locked. There were 4 glass panels in the upper half of the painted wooden door. The smashed kitchen window was much too high for her to crawl through. It still had sharp edges of glass. Too noisy to break those pieces off to get inside. It was either try the door with a screwdriver or go home. She placed the flathead at the door jamb, just below the lock, and pushed and wriggled it, scraping the paint and the wood, trying to slip it between the door and the upright. No luck. She would need a hammer and a chisel to get through it, and it would be much too loud. She couldn't risk alerting the neighbors. Amanda had never broken into a house before. She'd never imagined it would be this hard. She stood still for a few seconds, thinking through the problem, gently got onto her knees, biting her lip as her left knee took her weight. She brought out her flashlight, cupped a hand over it, and held it close to the lock. She looked through and saw that the key was in the lock on the other side of the door. She stood, killed the flashlight. Quinn had probably left the key in the door as he made his way outside last night. The cops, who had to make the property in some way secure, would more than likely have just closed this door, locked it, and left the key in the lock. If she could break the lower right pane of glass, she could reach in and unlock the door with the key. But breaking it would alert the neighbors. Amanda walked back to the tool shed, went inside, looked around. It was too dark to make things out clearly, and she couldn't risk the flashlight. Instead, she used her hands to feel around. There was a stool beneath the workbench with a small cushion strapped onto it. With no time to waste, she cut away the straps with the pocket knife, then found a roll of duct tape on a shelf. Perfect. Amanda returned to the back door. She put strips of duct tape on the pane, covering it. Then, a single strip from the center, down tight over the frame, and extending to below the lock. Taking her time, she placed the cushion against the taped pane and stabbed at it with the screwdriver, so that the head was jabbing at the edge of the glass, through the cushion. It sounded like ice being crushed in a cocktail shaker, but somehow muted, as if it was happening in another room close by. Not loud enough to be heard by any next-door neighbors, unless they were in their own backyards. Amanda pushed that thought away, moved the cushion, stabbed. When she had maneuvered the cushion all round the edges of the pane, she threw it back into the tool shed. Then, she pushed at the pane. It fell through onto the other side of the door, but the tape she'd placed across the center made sure it didn't fall to the floor. The broken glass was all still attached to the tape and remained in one piece. Careful to avoid the small shards surrounding the edge of the frame, she curled her arm through the door and unlocked it. The door opened, soundlessly. No creaks, no alarms. She was in, finally. She gave herself 10 minutes to search the property. She was looking for papers, ID, mail, credit card statements, anything that might give a clue to where she might find Naomi. She was certain Naomi had known Quinn. All that information she'd given Amanda about the layout of the back of the property. Either she'd been watching him for a long time, or she'd been in the house before. No one wants a man dead like someone who knows him well. Amanda didn't fully shut the door behind her in case she needed to make a quick exit. She moved fast through the home of her victim, her flashlight leading the way. She was careful not to let the beam hit the windows. The drapes were all closed, but she didn't know how thick they were and didn't want to advertise her presence. Nothing of interest in any of the kitchen drawers. Some art on the walls, same as the living room. No photographs, though, nor any placed on the mantelpiece. No images of Quinn, nor his family, nor loved ones. The dining room was a small office, with a laptop on the desk and a bookcase to match the one in the living room. No papers in the desk drawers, not even a notebook. The house was clean, minimal, with straight lines and white and black as a color palette. Before she went upstairs, Amanda saw a console table in the hallway. She opened the drawer and hit pay dirt, some utility bills and other assorted mail, all in the name of Frank Quinn. There were no pictures of him in the house. There was a thin veil of dust on the console table, but it had been disturbed, a thin line about 8 inches long with another smaller line behind it, probably a picture frame. A picture of Quinn, she thought. More than likely the picture they'd used on TV. Among the mail, she found a birthday card. It was at the bottom of the pile and had once been white, but it had yellowed with age. The front image was a single lit birthday candle. She opened it to find more dust inside. Happy birthday to the world's best son. I love you so much, Frankie. God bless, Mom. X. She swallowed, noticed the sting of emotion welling up at the back of her throat. Quinn may have done many things to Naomi to make her plot his murder. Maybe he was an unfaithful lover, a crook who swindled her out of her money, maybe even someone who physically hurt her or hurt or killed someone close to her. Or maybe he was an innocent, and Naomi wasn't acting out of vengeance but malice. At this moment, Amanda didn't know. She only knew Quinn was someone's son. She knew there would be a price to pay for what she had done, both emotional and legal. Who would believe she'd acted in self-defense when she had broken into the man's backyard and he'd found her holding his axe? Amanda put the mail and the card back in the drawer, slowly pushed it shut. She closed her eyes, tried to reset, as if she was shutting her guilt away in that drawer to be dealt with later. Right now, there was a job to be done. There was nothing she could find on the internet about Frank Quinn, Not since the fake websites had been taken down. He certainly wasn't a teacher, and she could find no link between that name and a school. And so far, nothing to reveal who this man really was, and the link between him and Naomi. Amanda crept upstairs, a single toothbrush in the bathroom. There were three bedrooms, one of them empty apart from a spare double bed. The second bedroom was essentially a walk-in closet. Two wardrobes, a shoe locker, and a chest of drawers. Just clothes, suits and shirts, and a shelf of books. The main bedroom had a double bed and a nightstand. There were books piled up by the bed, mostly on history and some books on espionage and spy rings, non-fiction. This sparked her curiosity briefly, but it wasn't relevant and she knew it. The nightstand had a single drawer, quite deep. When she opened it, she found a metal lockbox inside. It was small, the kind of box an office might use to keep petty cash or important documents inside. It was painted gray, and the lock and construction of the box looked sturdy. She picked up the keys on the nightstand, flicked through them, until she found a small key that looked as though it might fit into the box. Amanda slotted the key into the lock, and then she heard a bang, something heavy slamming. Then there were voices and footsteps in the hallway. The bang had come from the front door banging shut. There were people downstairs in the house. She killed the flashlight. Amanda held her breath, looked around the room, under the bed, the only place she could hide. She got down on her knees slowly, careful not to make any sound, and crawled beneath the bed, taking the lockbox with her.